Welcome to our podcast episode. This week we are talking about Sylvia Winter's work. We are very, very excited to dive into her two pieces that were assigned to us, Unsettling the Coloniality of Being, Power, Truth, Freedom. There's a Human After Man, It's Overrepresentation and Argument, and Towards the Sociogenic Principle, Fanon, Identity, the Puzzle of Conscious Experience, and What It Is Like to Be Black. So these were the two of Sylvia's readings that we were assigned, and we got into really, really great class discussion about this, as well as we have our own thoughts and ideas that we want to share in this podcast episode. And so we will go ahead and get started. And so now we'll kick us off and say that for me, this was the first time reading Winter's work. And I feel like I should have been exposed to Winter's work before now, but I'm glad that I'm taking this Caribbean critical theory course, because the first reading that I started with was Towards the Sociogenic Principle. And I will admit, for me, it was a bit dense. There were times I felt like I needed a dictionary while I was reading, and but through the class engagement, I was able to understand a lot of the different concepts and terms that Winters bring up, and it was also well situated that we read Fanon before we read Sylvia Winters' work, and she is phenomenal, and you can tell that she's well read and well educated, and really has us thinking critically about what it means to be human, what it means to be Black. And for me, there's a number of things that I took from that, but it was something that really have me continuing to think about things. And I forgot to say that my name is Tawana Hodge, I am one of the podcast hosts for today. And I will let either Abby or Dalton pick in up chime in about how they felt about the Sylvia Winter's text.
Thank you so much, Tawana, for starting us off. And I'm very happy to be with you in Dalton. My name is Abby, and I'm a third-year PhD in communication at UMD. And this is my first Critical Caribbean course. So I'm very grateful that I was able to read Winter, but this was also my first time reading some of Winter's books. I have, or sorry, works. I have heard of Winter and like some of her other works, but I also appreciate that while it was difficult for me to understand, just because I'm not well versed in a lot of the resources that she does cite. And I feel like something that I really appreciate about Winter is that she tells us explicitly where she gets all of her sources, and she synthesizes knowledge from so many different countries and parts of the world to, like Tawana was saying, talk about what it means to be human and what it means to be Black in this colonial Caribbean. And so while this was my first time looking at some of Winter's work, I definitely want to keep rereading this because every time I would look through it, there would just be more like nuggets that I would see that provides insight as to how colonialism really has so many different implications that I wasn't fully thinking about. And so that's something I really appreciate about her work, and I'll pass it on to Dalton.
Hi everyone. I'm really glad to be here as well. This is Dalton. I use they/them pronouns, and I'm part of the PhD program in sociology here at Maryland. This is actually not the first time I've interacted with Winter's work, largely through Fanon, having read Fanon, and then I feel like Winter is like the next person to read in that line of thought. So I have had the chance to read Unsettling Coloniality of Being previously, though it's as as Abby and Tuan have both mentioned, such a dense text that returning to it is like a necessity. And I've also interacted a bit with Black Metamorphosis, which was Winter's dissertation, I believe, but was never published. I think there are folks working on its publication currently, though, but it's like a 900-page manuscript. And there are often references in Winter's contemporary works to that dissertation, which wasn't published, or the manuscript that wasn't published, which is like, you know, it carries its own sort of upsettingness, right? Like, it should have been published long ago, and probably, like, to me, has the theoretical depth on par with like the greats that we know, you know, like of Marx and even of Fanon. So it's upsetting to think that text hasn't seen the light of day yet in its completion or totality. But I appreciate Winter's work so much because it's although it like fills in a lot of the gaps, as Dr. Dubinsky mentioned in class, that Fanon leaves, it retains a lot of those layers that make theory lasting and powerful, so that, as we've all said thus far, it's something that you have to return to and read differently and more deeply. So I'm excited to be here and work through it together, because it's definitely something that benefits from collaboration.
Thank you all so much. I didn't know that her dissertation wasn't published. I automatically assumed that somebody of this importance work would have already, like, all of Winter's work would have been like out there in the world, and many people are happily and challengingly consuming her work. So that is something that is interesting to know, but glad that there's people who are actively working on making sure that more people are exposed to Winter's work. And so I'm curious about, like, is there a particular passage or a sequence of idea that stuck with you and why? So it could be anything that was like maybe problematic, that was edifying, anything in between. And so for me in particular, it was interesting. Through Winter's work, I feel like I understand Fanon's work a little bit more. And, you know, we talked a lot about colonialism as a total system and project, and that it's closed. And that in Fanon's work and Winter's work, you know, thinking about, like, what does it mean to be Black? And then, like, you know, that being is anti-Blackness. And that was something that was discussed in course. And then it made me think about, like, critical race theory and how, like, part of CRT is how one of the tenets is that, like, you know, racism is endemic and it's everywhere and it's normalized. And that, like, in Fanon's work, I believe, and I will also be honest and say that, like, in this course is the first time I deeply read Fanon's work. And so I am still digesting, for lack of a better word, you know, Fanon's work, and think about it in tandem with Winter's and other works that I've read and consumed. But thinking about the fact that not just colonialism as a total project, thinking about not how racism, and we talk a lot about racism and colonialism and kind of like the beginnings of racism, but for me, thinking about how being is anti-Black, is anti-Blackness, and that for the Black person, and I identify as being Afro-Caribbean from the Virgin Islands, and my family being from different Caribbean islands. And so for me, I find it interesting of, like, Fanon and Winter's work talking about, you know, colonialism and racism from a Caribbean context. And we learned about that Winter's was born in Cuba but raised in Jamaica by Jamaican parents. And, you know, for me, also thinking about, like, what effect that has, and Winter's work that she does within the Caribbean and Latin American as well. I feel like I'm going around in circles. So I'm going to bring it back to the main point is really thinking about how the sense of self about for me, Black people, that we there's no way we could ever aspire or could be white, you know. And so in that the systems that we live in that is rooted in colonialism and racism is always going to be anti-Black. And like, you know, being able to see how Fanon and Winter put it in such a stark way, and with Fanon being, you know, a psychiatrist, and then, you know, Winter's background as a scholar and, you know, researcher, and having evidence in different ways. And Winter, she brings in evidence from like Du Bois and other folks that I've never heard about as well. And so for me, it was very eye-opening in many sense, and is something that I definitely need to dig deeper into. So I feel like I talked a lot, so I'm gonna let the others chime in.
Thank you, Tawana. And I think just going off your point of you mentioning how she cites so many people, like, I feel like, I mean, it's idealistic or naive to think that anti-Blackness isn't everywhere. But even though, like, yes, I knew that, just seeing that, like you said, you know, Fanon has all this evidence through his work, both in the Caribbean and in France, and then Winter, something that stood out to me is that she's citing so much different types of knowledge and ways to think about knowledge. And something that stood out to me is that she also referenced a lot of ethnographies. And so just seeing that, just like, you know, how you mentioned Fanon and Winter really delve deep into the effects of anti-Blackness and colonialism. You know, it's not just in the Caribbean, but she's explaining how this happens everywhere and how that still impacts the Caribbean also.
I think for me, one of the more significant trends that stands out in Winter's work is her impressive historical analysis, which really is like a, you know, like a world systems theory, which I don't think, I mean, like a world systems theory is its own theoretical camp. And I don't think many world systems theorists like recognize or treat Winter with the respect that she deserves, because essentially she is, I mean, we see this quite significantly in Unsettling Coloniality of Being. She's rewriting a historical story, right? And I think across that history that she's writing, there's this deep exploration of the move across, or how in the transformation of man, right? And like from man one to man two. One of the things that as a sociologist I noticed while reading it was its relationship to the works of Max Weber, a German sociologist. And for him, he talks quite a bit about the rationalization of capitalism, right? And like in his general theory of history, he argues that like the Calvinists who believed in predestination or or predetermination, that like people in the Calvinist faith had, or everyone on earth essentially, but particularly the Calvinists had been, their fate had been decided. They were going to heaven or to hell prior to their birth, right? So it was like completely out of their hands. And so Weber argues that like there's this process that that Protestants underwent where they came to like rationalize their religious anxieties about not knowing whether they would end up in heaven or hell by fixating on their material success, right? So like for them, Weber argues that like Protestants became aware of like, if I'm doing well in the markets or as a capitalist continually, not just like making a lot of money and then, you know, sitting with that money, but continually succeeding, then it's a sign that I'm in God's favor, right? So then that's like the source of Weber's theory of rationalization. And there's a lot of parallels to be made between Weber's theory of rationalization and Winter's and I think Winter does an even better job than Weber could by raising the question of colonial domination, because Weber doesn't raise any concern for race or anti-blackness. So I think that that's like a fascinating overlap, because for Winter, the move from Man One to Man Two is about rationalization as well, right? Like the move from the spirit to the flesh, and that is like a powerful re-evaluation of history.
Thank you for that, Lilton. As you were talking, I was like, yes. To go off of that and to divvy it just a little bit, as you were talking, it made me think about the 1619 Project, Nicole Hannah-Jones, as you were mentioning, talking about, you know, whole systems and kind of like rewriting history or the historical story, and that like Winters does this work beautifully, but also captures these systems, these inequitable systems and structures, and made me thinking about, especially now, there's a lot of pushback against the accurate or non of what I'm trying to say is, like, there's currently right now in the US this push to suppress certain histories and identities and stories and narratives. So those who are Black, those who identify LGBTQ, the intersectionality of that, and other marginalized identities. And it has me thinking about, you know, the work that is done to accurately capture what really happened in history, but also what is currently happening now. And a question I'm supposed to you all, apologies for putting you all on the spot, but I just find this so interesting what you brought up, Dalton, is that, is there anything as you were like reading Winter's work that really connected to what was happening or what is happening now? And if so, how?
Yeah, I think one of the more useful paradigms that Winter offers is the question of adaptive truth for. I mean, I think that her use of adaptive is especially important, because it's, it allows the question of truth for to be moved across like societies and contexts. And so I think there's like plenty to be said about what adaptive truth for looks like today. And I think one of the other terms that's useful in that, in examining truth for, is like common sense, right? And we talked a little bit about this in class, but like Winter is like kind of unshrouding the common sense that's been allowed to exist, that's been built up over decades, centuries of anti-Blackness and of colonial violence. And then like you're sort of at the end of Winter's work left saying, you know, all that I've known and come to believe is natural and common is in fact like a culmination of horror, right? So it's like a especially haunting thing. But I think like for the question about like what are the implications for today, I think like we see constantly the battle of narrative, right? And I think like with the genocide that Palestinians are experiencing at the hands of Israel, there is this battle for truth, and the ruling order has like uneven access to truth, right? They can set the standard, but there's also a great deal of counter-hegemonic truth making that can be done in order to like unsettle that, which I think is sort of what Winter gets at, particularly at the end of Unsettling Coloniality of Being, where, you know, there is like, if the problem is 1,000 anecdotes, right? If the problem is that the world is made by these like stories that have been told and retold and insisted upon, then mm-hmm. there may be a way out by telling stories that disobey this. And I think like this also relates to, I believe Sylvia Winter, if I'm not mistaken, was a dancer at one point in her life, which it relates to some of her other works that would definitely connect back to Renee Meynell and the Césaires, where like poetry and art, Black music, jazz, they offer little windows into this anti or counter hegemonic storytelling that's possible.
Thank you. And tying back to Dalton, what you said, and to honor your question, something that I think relates to that, just in how I interpreted it, was on page 60 and towards the sociogenic principle in that work. She mentions the result becomes that we are left unable to move beyond the limits, both of our present adaptive order of objective knowledge. And to me, going back to both of your conversations about what is knowledge and what is really the truth, you know, I think Winter does a great job, like in her work, unsettling, you know, while unfortunately, like in order to unsettle colonialism itself, you have to dismantle the systems and the systems of oppression and racism. But she does a lot of work unsettling these sources of, you know, so-called science and knowledge that have been used to oppress, particularly in this case Black Caribbeans, and so thinking of the objective versus like subjective truth, and how she is doing this work to retell you know, these narratives of like how Tawana, you mentioned, of what really happened. That's something that stood out to me. And yeah, unfortunately, that's something I see now, like, you know, in the US with the censoring of books and book banning, with curriculums being dismantled, not even being able to teach critical theory. So the fact that we're in this class, you know, is something not everyone is able to access. And so I see that this, you know, unfortunately, this still exists, and it's still, there's still a lot of censorship and banning to even access knowledge or these, and I don't want to say counter narratives, because, you know, why is it that these white colonial stories are the standard, or why are they viewed as the truth? But we see this retelling and this retelling of stories.
Thank you for that, you all. And that just have me thinking so much more. And thank you, Dalton and Abby, for connecting all of these concepts and talking about like adaptive truth. And honestly, when you said common sense, my first my first thought was that common sense ain't so common, 'cause that's something I grew up with in the islands. And you've meant it in a different way of like the common sense of like how things have always been. And you talk about like the, maybe like the horror of like this reality that things haven't always, isn't the way that people imagine it to be or designed it to be. And so, you know, and you brought up something that is in Winter's work on towards the sociogenic principle of Man One and Man Two, and that took up a significant amount of conversation in our class discussion earlier this week. And I was utterly fascinated about, you know, this, what Winter talked about And, you know, really thinking about this, I don't want to say metamorphosis, I guess, or maybe metamorphosis or transition, but like, what does it mean to be mad? And you talked about, one of you all talked about rationality, and how that, I think, has been used to change and define what does it mean to be human, or man in this case. And also talked, we also talked about like how the transatlantic slave trade, and you know, what the Spanish considered to be like the legitimization of enslavement. And so I am I'm curious to know, and now we're wonderful listeners, more about your thoughts about the sociogenic principle of man one and man two. And we also touched on, like, you know, the different sense of what sociogenic meant, as well as thinking about what does it mean to be, like, what man two looks like in colonization, in connection to colonization and enslavement. And if there's anything that I said incorrectly or I might be misinterpreting, just feel free to chime in and let me know. But what are your thoughts about man one and man two?
Thank you, Tawana, for that. And I'm glad you brought that up, because that's something I was thinking of. And again, please correct me if I misinterpreted this incorrectly. But I think what stood out to me is that this concept of, you know, in quotes, being rational, and how you said that has been used not only by the Spaniards, but across the Caribbean in order to subjugate and oppress oppress Black Caribbeans and also indigenous peoples in the Caribbean. And to me, it's like, when I was reading as to how this concept of rationality was used to oppress, to me, I was like, you know, how is it rational to hate or subjugate someone just because, you know, they look different from you or they don't come from the same culture? And to me, like, I just find the irony of that, of, you know, there's no way to, and we know that there's no way to, I'm trying to find the word, to defend colonialism or to defend slavery. And the fact that that was used to subjugate, to me, was something hard to grapple with. But like you said, you know, that's something you see across the Caribbean. And we had this discussion a little bit in class as well. And Dalton, I don't know what your thoughts are, but yeah, I'm curious to hear them as well.
Yeah, I think like the transatlantic slave trade is this monstrous logistical effort. And I think that that for Winter is such a like an expression of this like rationalization that like we discussed in class, where there's this move from the anti-native religious oppression, right, which then is resolved because indigenous people can be civilized by inclusion in the religious schema, and then there is the transition to you know, anti-blackness like unfolds there as like the answer, because and then there's like in doing so, the blackness is inscribed on the skin, right? And I think this goes back to Fanon's point about where he quotes Sartre in Black Skin White Mask, where Sartre says something about how the Jew is whoever the anti-Semite says he is, right, or whatever he is, and then Fanon continues that thought and says, like, yes, this is true for the Black person as well, but I can't escape my Blackness, right? And all that to say, like, this plays out in the transatlantic slave trade being this like irrational project, right? Like, and I think now today, like, I've had conversations with other folks recently about this, where like there are some conspiracy theories about how the slave trade wasn't real, or that like enslaved, or like that Black Africans were actually native to what we call the New World today, because it's so irrational to think that the European world would engage in this massive movement of millions of lives across the Atlantic, right? And yet, like, that irrationality works in the favor of anti-Blackness and the existing world, like social order, right? Like, it works in favor of white supremacy, because like now we have the slavocracy in the New World, like this huge capitalist enterprise. And also we have all these different aspects of it, like insurance today is dependent on enslavement, right? Like, insuring the lives of enslaved people was one of the first iterations of insurance. So that's just one example of like this massive movement. So like, I think Winter's work does a good job of showing that this thing that we have come to accept as rational is entirely not the case, right? It's a very grotesque, like, there was a lot of thought behind it, and it's not simply because Black people are naturally less than, but that they have been made to be in the inscription of Blackness on Black skin. So yeah, it's I think Winter's work is so fundamental for helping us work through that, to like cut away the pieces. So that's all I'll say for that now.
Oh, thank you all. And you all bring up really, really, really great points. And, you know, for me, as I'm reading this, it just makes so much sense. But it also makes because when you said that, like, there are some people who believe that, like, you know, the transatlantic slave trade, you know, didn't exist, or like, you know, there's even people who are trying to say that there is so much benefit to enslaving Africans, to enslavement in general. And, you know, it makes me think about the sheer whitewashing and censorship and erasure that occurs, and even thinking about the fact that I, even though I was born and raised in the Caribbean, I have heard of Fanon, but through my education I've never read Fanon's or Winter's work. And, you know, really, for me personally, as a Black woman, how Blackness is a predictor for life expectancy for so many things in the U.S. And in the Virgin Islands, I will say too, it really helps, like, Winter's and Fanon's work really help ground me in the fact that, like, this level of inferiority and superiority is something that is imagined, but it is something that has so much real world implications, because this is something that is by design, you know. And this is, like, you all mentioned that this is something that is subsequently, intentionally ongoing. And it's not to say that we live in this post-colonial, decolonial state, because one of the questions I brought up is that how could people who have been colonized and have colonized mindsets truly engage in decolonization? And because there's been a push in the last 4 to 5 years in particular about challenging and getting rid of anti-Black racism, of centering decolonization. But one of Fanon's points in Black Skin, White Mask, I hope I said that correctly, was going beyond this concept of race, of Blackness and whiteness. But I think in Winter's work, she grounds us and exposes this, what the word that you use, Dalton, grotesque and irrationality that I think is so critical and so necessary for us to engage in. And so all of that is just my question is, what was your overall assessment of the material for the week? Did you enjoy it? Why am I not? Was it successful as a series of arguments, claims, observations? Why not? I really do enjoy Winter's work because it helps ground me in Fanon and other works that I've read in this class and outside of this course as well. And it just helps provide historical grounding and foundation for me. And it's definitely something on my to-read list to help me further understand about this concept of colonization and racism, especially in connected to my research. How about you all?
I definitely agree. I think, as Tawana mentioned, you know, like this Winter's work, there's so much that can be found in it, like so much that has to be and has yet to be explored from it. And as I mentioned in class too, like I feel often that sociologists take the mantle of writing the truth that Winter is trying to dissect and problematize. And so I think as an extension of that, sociologists really don't care for Winter's work, which is rather unfortunate. But I think because there's like a recognition that it would cause problems, right? To integrate Winter's work would mean to confront sociology and the social sciences' devotion to like Western science and all that it carries, like all of the anti-blackness embedded in science as we know it. And yeah, so I think that there's like so much to unpack with Winter's work, and she provides like a method of analysis that like can, I don't know. I mean, like for instance, I'm a scholar of social movements. And so in the social movements literature, which I don't recommend people read because it's mostly terrible, but there's this like economization of social movements, right? This belief that people who are activists are involved in direct action, they engage in like a cost-benefit analysis of, you know, what's worth doing. And I think that that's such a strange and belittling approach to movements. And as like a consequence of that, there is this regular reliance on a common sense that's unspoken in that literature, right? Like it's like now it's strange and regressive almost to go against the grain and say that that's probably not how social movements really work, particularly revolutionary movements, right? And so I think Winter offers a way of like throwing into question that common sense. So I think there's, even though Winter's project is much grander, there are ways of taking her method and then taking on all those thousand anecdotes that allow the existing order to prevail.
Thank you for that, Tawana and Dalton. And yeah, just even talking about this with you all is making me think of all of the applications of Winter's work. And it's really unfortunate that she's not taken seriously or she's not valued in all of these different fields. Because if it weren't for this class, I don't think I would have had the chance to read Winter's work in a class setting. I study communication, specifically communication science, which Dalton, I agree with what you said about social sciences can be really awful in perpetuating these systems of oppression, unless we have people like Winter who are actively trying to be decolonial and doing anti-racist work. And so I appreciate that we had the chance to read these pieces, and again, I will be going back to them and reading some of her other works, but there are so many implications, and I really hope that in the future people really apply this, whether it's through different disciplines or into their own research as well.
Thank you all so much. The last question that I have as we wrap up is there anything else that you wanted to talk about, discuss that we didn't get a chance to touch on? I know for me, not only did it have me rethinking things that I thought were, well, my experiences, had me really rethinking my experiences and the works that I had previously read and engaged in. But there was something that was brought up in class about how engaging, you know, in this work, and being able to do it, like, as you engage in the system, as it was phrased, like taking a position to speak against a system that you were a part of, and like how much work that is, really takes to do that, to be not just like critical, but to think through what are some ways that we can move through these systems in a way that is like healing or rejuvenative, or, you know, acknowledging that a lot of this, it was just like I had to take time out from reading Winter's work to just process it, because it was just a lot for me personally as I was reading Fanon's work, Winter's work, Cesare's work, you know, and really thinking about this total system of colonialism, and to engage with it in this way. I really understand like the monster that it is and how much effect that it has on me and a lot of folks. But is there anything else that folks wanted to share before we close out?
Thank you, Tawana. I think just going back to what you mentioned, I also had to like read this in sections, because having that, like, you know, I like reading this re-edified the just the notion that we are still like, essentially they're both saying that colonialism is a total system and a closed system, and there's not much that we can do to break it or dismantle it. And so that was hard for me to read. And just going back to what you said of like reflecting that, you know, this may be normalized, but it's not normal. And we don't really know how deep rooted colonialism and anti-Blackness is until it's like you dismantle that. Oh, okay. You know, this is a systems we live in, but things shouldn't be this way in terms of like all of the implications that are very sinister, that are not overt, but that has continued to perpetuate into our societies and lives.
Agreed. And I think I'll only add that, like, I think that there are certain pessimistic and nihilistic positions that Winter takes, but I do believe that she is a strong advocate. I don't know if advocate's the right word, but she thinks highly of the possibilities of language. And so there are pessimistic and Black nihilist interpretations of Winter, and I think that they take her work in really important and necessary ways. But I also think that Winter, like at the core of Winter's work, there's this an awareness and assessment of the paradox that is always present in in descriptive statements in the making of man. And those things, I believe, winter trust can be broken. And I think like this, I keep repeating it, but like, you know, like if there's 1,000 anecdotes that have made this world, then 1,000 anecdotes can unmake it, right? I mean, of course, this is a centuries long effort that we're up against, but it's not impossible. It's not as it always has been, and it's not as it always will be.
And thank you all for that. And I think that point of 1,000 anecdotes or 1,000 stories, in the centuries that certain stories have been told, I think there's been a lot of people for at least over a century now that has been combating that, which is reassuring. I'm cautiously optimistic. And so a question I just want to pose to the people listening. If Fanon still existed, I'm curious about the discussion that Fanon and Winter would have together. Like, what would they talk about? That's just something we just want to leave you all with. But thank you all for taking the time to listen to our discussion on Winters. Hopefully you took something from it and something resonated. But we enjoyed Winters, and I think for all of us, we're looking forward to seeing how Winters' work will continue to change us and the world as people get to encounter Winter's work in different ways. So take care, y'all, and thank you for listening.